The final case for oral argument this morning is the Spearfish Education Association Appellant versus the Spearfish School Board Appellee. For the appellant, we have Ms. Ann Pluster, an attorney from Peer. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Lester. Is it Nice?
Correct.
Okay. From Spearfish. And Ms. Pluster, you have 20 minutes, and you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Ann Pluster. I'm the general counsel for the South Dakota Education Association, and I represent the Spearfish Education Association in this matter. The matter before the court this morning is about maintaining the integrity of the negotiated agreement and maintaining the integrity of the negotiations process. There are two issues before the court. The first issue is whether new hire salaries should have been reduced to match the negotiated agreement language. And if the court should agree with that, then the second issue is, if so, what is the remedy? We do not dispute that the district was required to hire the new hires under the 05-06 negotiated agreement because negotiations were ongoing at the time and the 06-07 negotiated agreement did not exist. Our dispute is over the adjustment process after the imposition of that 06-07 agreement. As this court has said numerous times in numerous cases, school district policies have the full force and effect of law, especially negotiated ones. The one in front of the court today is a negotiated new hire salary formula. That formula calls for a point system for years of teaching experience, graduate and undergraduate hours, and degrees, with the points being totaled and compared to a chart that gives the salary for that incoming teacher. That language is clear and unambiguous and should be applied as written. We believe that the language is clear that the district is required to give only those salaries to its new employees, and it is clear that the district cannot deviate from those salaries without agreement from the association.
Are these new hires members of your association?
Your Honor, I really don't know the answer to that question. I've never gone and looked. I'm going to assume some are and some aren't.
Right.
But they're all part of the bargaining unit represented by the...
So you're kind of in a difficult position because you're, in a sense, asking some of you, asking to reduce the salaries of some of your members.
Yes, we understand.
Unusual position for a teacher's union to be in.
It's very unusual. And again, we are not here necessarily. Yes, we're here to ask that the salaries be reduced back down, but we're here because we believe that that negotiated agreement must be applied, must be maintained, and the negotiations process must be maintained.
All right. There was a, wasn't there a binding contract between the individual teachers and the education district? That the statute requires that there be an individual contract, or there is a statute that requires that, and there was a contract that was entered, which was, as you indicated in your first statement, was entered into under the correct formula. What authority does the district have to go back and change that contract?
Yes, there is a statute that requires that teachers have individual employment contracts with the districts. But once the 05-06 negotiated agreement ceased to exist, and it ceased to exist when the 06-07 agreement was imposed by the board, and also it ceased to exist under the 05-06 negotiated agreement under its duration clause. That agreement has a duration clause that says it will cease to exist either upon a subsequent agreement as approved by the parties or implementation of an agreement pursuant
to the statute.
That's
the overall contract. I'm talking about the individual contract with the teacher. What authority did the district have to change that contract?
There is a case from this court, and I cannot cite it for you right now, that says that an individual employment contract can have nothing in it that is in contravention or in conflict with the negotiated agreement. In other words, the negotiated agreement overrides the individual contract where they conflict.
Have you cited to that in your brief?
Actually, I did not, Your Honor. That particular argument did not occur to me until Justice Severson's question.
What statute is that, did you
say? It's a case.
It's a case, all right.
I believe it's a Todd County School District case.
Actually, I don't
think it talks about it in Todd County.
All right.
Let's just look at the contract, if we could, just for a second. I'm trying to figure out what exactly is the contract here. And I'm looking at this thing here, Professional Negotiation Agreement 0506. And then, of course, then there's the individual contract that the teachers sign. Yeah, if you'd get it, because I'm going to ask you about it. Then I have this I have one of the individual contracts the teacher signed that sets the salary and the particular assignment the teacher does. And my question to you is this, first of all, I've got a couple of them, but the teacher's contract is this one page, but it also includes this document as well. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, it is included.
I'm looking at page 3, and it says section Article 6B, and it says, individual teacher's contract shall be in the form as provided in Appendix A and will reflect the terms and conditions of this agreement. And here's this is the form that they're using, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so then if you would, just so I can understand here, why we have to go anywhere beyond the contract. If you look at the signature page of the agreement, the big agreement that's included in this one pager, and it's page 15. And I'm looking at the language there. It says, this agreement shall remain in effect until such time as a subsequent contract is approved by the parties for the implementation of the contract terms pursuant to, and then it refers to the statute. So it seems to me, you've argued about what a case says, but doesn't this contract itself say that this agreement lasts only as long as the new contract is negotiated or is implemented by impasse?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our argument, that the 05...
So that's all you have to do. You don't have to look at the statute. You just look at the contracts. So this would mean that the teachers signed this in May, the school district signed this they signed it the previous August of 05. They're both included. And when the new contract comes in, all the terms of this contract supersede all of this. Is that
correct,
right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So we don't need a case to say it. The parties agreed to this.
It has been our initial argument, both to the department, to the circuit court, and to this court. The department agreed with us that the negotiated agreement, the 06-07 one, had been violated. We did not agree with their remedy, and that is the second issue I will get to. The circuit court reversed the department, and that is why we're in front of the court today. And there are parts of the circuit court's ruling that I believe the court may need to look at. I would agree with you, Justice, that the contract language is plain, clear, and unambiguous, and should be applied as is, and end of story. But the decisions go on from there.
Is that the language that you were referring to earlier in your argument when you referred to the duration clause?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
That's what Justice Konenkamp just went through.
Yes, Your Honor.
What was the duration of the contract with the teachers? Wasn't it for the school year?
Yes, Your Honor. Each individual employment contract is for the school year that it covers. And then there is a negotiated agreement with the association that in this particular case covered 1 year. Sometimes negotiated agreements might cover more than 1 year, but in this case, because they were imposed, they were only 1 year negotiated agreements.
So what does the individual teacher actually sign when they sign a contract?
They
sign that one page or the individual. Do they also get the entire packet, the big contract?
It varies from district to district,
here?
Your Honor, I will have to confess that I don't know. I make the assumption that the association and or the school district makes the agreement available after it is either imposed or agreed to the members.
But when they sign the 2005-06, as part of that, do they get a copy of, or is it part of the contract the big contract that contains all the specifics of it beyond just the salary?
Excuse me, Your Honor. Because that would be a management thing when they hire and what documents the district would give out, I have absolutely no idea as to that question.
Well, was that agreement included by reference in the teacher contract?
Yes, Your Honor, as Justice Kohnkamp read the language in the agreement.
That was the other way around. That was the large agreement that incorporated. I'm talking about the teacher contract.
Yes.
That include by reference the larger contract.
Yes. Every individual employment contract, it incorporates by reference the negotiated agreement, because that employment contract can be no better and cannot conflict.
Does it specifically say that?
I don't recall that it does. I've not looked at it. I do not have it with me. My copies are the ones that were handed to the department as an exhibit, and they're in binders a couple of inches.
Well, let's put it a different way. Is there any dispute? Is there any dispute between the parties that these two documents control or are part of the contract? Now, teachers aren't claiming that they didn't know about this. There's no dispute that they knew about both of these, and they thought this was the contract, these two things.
That's correct, Your Honor. As I stated earlier, we believe that the circuit court's ruling errs in a couple of manners. One, we believe that the circuit court confused the 05-06 salaries with the district's last offer for 06-07. The circuit court held that the last offer could not be reduced under 318.8.2. However, the district's last offer was not reduced. The last offer of the new higher salary was that language. And it would not be reduced if the new higher salary formula was applied across the board as it should have been. The 05-06 salaries are not part of the imposed 06-07 negotiated agreement. As Justin Kohnkamp has pointed out, only the new imposed higher salary is. The 05-06 salary ceased to exist when the 06-07 contract was imposed. And
the,
we have
the higher salaries, but in this case, it wasn't a higher salary.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
You just said the higher salaries imposed, but it's in this case, it's not a higher salary.
No, the new higher, H-I-R-E, not increased salaries, okay. Because we're talking about new teachers to the
All
district.
Right.
Well, didn't, you know, I guess, although maybe the trial court didn't exactly say this, but the way I interpreted the trial court is the trial court saying the individual contracts trump the last imposed offer.
And I would...
Because they were signed and they were better deal, I guess. And what's wrong with that?
Because even though I did not cite it in my case, because as I said, that argument did not occur to me, there is a case that says that the negotiated agreement trumps the individual contract.
This isn't a negotiated agreement. That is a difference here. This is a last imposed offer. Isn't that make a difference?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, why not?
Because under the statutes, there is no distinction between an imposed or an agreed upon negotiated agreement. The parties have to operate under them the same. The district is required to implement all of the provisions within that agreement, whether it's agreed to or whether it is imposed.
Well, you haven't cited authority. You haven't cited authority for that proposition.
I believe that that's how I interpret 318.8.2. I don't think this court has ever ruled on that. And trying to find that particular language in a search has come up blank that it exists in other states to come up with any
citation. Well, looking at 318.8.2, the trial court, I think, also relied on some of this as a minimum language in the second sentence of 318.8.2.
Yes, Your Honor, and I was about to get to that in my argument.
Well, why don't you get to that now?
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I read the circuit court's decision as holding that 318.8.2 contemplates the new higher salaries will rise and not fall from year to year, and the court references as a minimum for that. However, that phrase is used in reference to the employer's last offer. The parties are still free to negotiate whatever changes they may want, even if those changes may be less than the previous negotiated agreement. So the idea that a negotiated agreement, even salaries, would not fall from year to year, I think is an error on the part of the circuit court. I know of some of our locals where the base salary, the salary that new teachers are hired at, is frozen from year to year. There has been step movement where the years of experience are frozen, and so they're actually making less under the contracts. So the parties can negotiate whatever they want, and that would be what was imposed, even if those are less changes.
Let me ask you about the remedy. If it seems as if both, neither side, if we do decide that the trial court was incorrect, neither side agrees with the way the remedy that was imposed by the department, because the trial court didn't even talk about a remedy.
That's correct, because he reversed.
Procedurally, would we have to remand to the trial court to address the remedy? Because normally we would not address that in first impression at this case. If we found that if we agreed with both of you that the department incorrectly imposed the remedy, then wouldn't we have to remand this to the trial court to address that issue?
I am not sure, Your Honor. I did not research that. I made an assumption that under de novo review that you could address the remedy rather than remand it. But I will leave that to the court's wisdom and what it believes it can and can't do. Turning to the remedy, as Justice Minor Henry stated, both sides agree the department's remedy was incorrect, and we both agree that the new hired teachers did not participate in the ADM advancement. My research has shown that this is probably a case of first impression for this court. I believe that the technical remedy is a reduction of those new hire salaries to their correct level with a repayment of the overage. I believe that the Reniger and the Cox cases, by analogy, will get you there in those cases where they were grievances where teachers weren't paid the proper amount and should have been paid more. You allowed them to be paid the proper amount. Here we're just going the other way, making sure the proper amount is made. I also believe that the AFSCME Local 1025 case also does that, because this would just put those new hires back in a position they would have been except for the district's breach, and that is the normal remedy for a breach of contract case. You get put back in a position you would have been except for that breach.
If I hear you correctly, you've changed your position from your brief. In the brief you were talking about freezes and this and that. Let me be clear. You're asking that the remedy be that the correct amounts be implemented, and that these teachers have to refund the money.
I believe that is the technical correct remedy. However, as I argue in my brief and as I'm arguing right now, we believe that the politically correct remedy, and the remedy the association is actually requesting, is that the new hire salaries be frozen where they're at, if they're still in the school district, until such time as that salary increase on the proper 06-07 salary catches up to where they are now.
Well, I just meant, though, I don't want to know about politically correct remedies. I want to know what's the legal remedy.
I believe the legal remedy would be that reduction of salary. My client is not happy with that, and I've made the argument in my brief that the correct legal remedy is the reduction in salaries. Also for my client, I'm arguing the freeze in the salaries.
Well, then you have the issue of some of those 15 may have left the district, so there's no salary to freeze. What, do they just pay it back?
If they've left the district, that is a good question that I guess I did not discuss with my client.
All right.
Actually, how many, did we ever decide how many of it actually, is it 7 or 8 teachers?
It is 7. When I was preparing for this oral argument and going back through all of my records, I realized that the eighth person was actually a conflict over a per diem because that person was hired after the imposition, and so it's actually seven, and that is my mistake, and I apologize to the court for making it look like it was eight. I see that my time is down to 30 seconds, so I will.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Plooster. Mr. Neese, you have 20 minutes, sir.
And may I borrow your contract copy, please? May it please the court, counsel. The Spearfish School District is in a tough spot, too. We didn't want this problem, but it caught up with us because of financial difficulties. Just to give you a quick background, and this is in the record, but just to summarize it, the Spearfish School District had 6 years of continuous budget reductions because of not having enough money to run the district properly. And one of the problems that the school district faced in its negotiated agreements with the school district teachers was that our old salary schedule had a base, and all of the growth in the salary schedule was based upon percentage increases from the base. So you might have a 0.2 adjustment for this credit and a 0.3 adjustment for that many years of education. And so every time in calculating this, the superintendent testified to the Department of Labor that when we added $1 to the base, we added $100,000 to our total salary schedule. So we were stuck in a position that the school district couldn't raise its base in order to hire new teachers. And so we were falling further behind, and the school district administration said we have to do something about this. And so in the 05-06 contract, we had a salary freeze, and the old salary schedule was still in place, that one that had the base plus all these percentage increases. In 06-07, we enter a brand new era because the district proposed a brand new salary schedule, both for new hires and for returning teachers. And so we, as a school district, were in that situation of transitioning employees, both returning employees and employees that were new to the district but hired before the imposition date of the new contract. And that's the seven we're talking about here. We had to address how are we going to deal with returning teachers, for example. And that's covered in the trial court's findings. You'll see that there's that four-step new salary process. How about the new hires?
Well, actually, there'd be no question how you deal with them if this unique situation hadn't arisen. Isn't that true?
That's right.
I mean, you would always go by what the last best offer was, or a new negotiated agreement.
I bet under normal circumstances, that's exactly
right. Why isn't it the same here? Aren't we getting into some really muddy water if we say this is okay in this case because certain teachers maybe won't get as good a deal under the new or the last best offer? I mean, aren't we then just really throwing the whole collective bargaining process out the window and saying we're going to give you the if you reach an impasse, the school board gets the deal?
Well, with due respect to you, Your Honor,
I'm asking a question.
Yeah,
I need an answer.
Well, and my answer is going to disagree with you, and that's why
it's a question.
Oh, okay.
Why
well,
are we throwing it out?
No, absolutely not.
Why not? Then we're saying individual contracts trump the agreement.
No, not that either, Your Honor. We are both of these bargaining units, the employer, public employer, and this isn't just necessarily school district, but in this case it is. The school district employer is bound by a good faith obligation, as is the employee bargaining unit.
And that's not a question, evidently, in this, because it goes up as a grievance, right?
Right, it went
up
as a grievance.
There's no allegation that you were trying to bargain an unfair labor practice.
That's right. There wasn't, and there isn't. But The argument that what I sense, Your Honor, is that the argument that SEA is making is that if we permit the school district to do what the school district did in this case for those seven teachers, we're throwing out the bargaining statutes. And that was kind of addressed in the Bonham case that's both sides have cited here. And in the Bonham case, this court said, we feel that the statutes that are in place under Chapter 13.8 provide a sufficient outline for the parties so that there's no problems with the negotiations process. And if we read the words as a minimum in 318.8.2, those words have to mean something. If they aren't given any meaning in this case, then they're just not in that statute.
Well, let me add along that line. It's an interesting statute when you read the whole thing, because the at a minimum language is actually in the second sentence, and the second sentence deals with when you've gone to the Department of Labor, and if no agreement is reached in negotiations and the intervention of the Labor Department under 318.8.1 fails to bring about an agreement, the board shall implement as a minimum. Interestingly, that's not the case here. You did not go to the Department of Labor. You reached an impasse and you decided not to go to the Department of Labor, right? The Department of Labor didn't make any findings and you didn't have a hearing on it.
My recollection, Your Honors, was that we went to mediation and the mediator, you know, we had the Department of Labor mediator come out. I think we've done that every time we've reached impasse.
There are no findings, though, in the record. I thought I read the minutes. I thought the minutes of your board meeting said that the association did not want the Labor Department involved. So anyway, all right, we'll have to figure that out if you're telling me something other than I read in the record.
Yeah,
okay, if that's the case, then that second sentence. But the last sentence says, if the Labor Department is not requested to intervene under the provisions of 318.8.1, the board shall implement the provisions of its last offer, including tentative agreements, 11 days after an impasse is declared. It says the board shall implement the provisions of its last offer. How do you get past that shall implement?
We did implement the provisions of our last best offer.
Except for seven teachers.
Correct. All I can say is we didn't want this problem, but the problem faced itself because of the transition that we faced. And in the negotiations process with the teachers prior to the time of impasse, one of the issues that the teachers were upset about was new hire salaries. And so the result of all of those discussions was what you see, a new hire schedule where seven teachers hired under the old contract schedule, and that was all there was. There was all there was. And those contracts, Your Honor, were issued for the upcoming year, not for the prior year.
Right, and the statute required the school district to offer the salary per the present contract. The statute mandates that. So the school district had no choice. They had to sign, if they were going to have the new teachers sign a contract before the agreement was finished, negotiations, then they had to give them last year's schedule.
Yes, that's correct. And in this one time, in all the years I've been doing school law, I've been their attorney for 15 years. This is the first time I've ever seen the new hire increment schedule go down. And that's the problem here. We caught these really innocent employees in a situation where we offered them salary X, and suddenly, without it really even being aware, anybody being aware of it, the imposed contract resulted in a reduction. We did not believe, and still honestly don't believe, we have the legal authority to go back to those seven teachers and say, we have to reduce your salary from what we offered you. Because we didn't tell them.
Isn't that legal? I mean, I don't want to beat this to death, but we went through the two contracts here, and in the last clause of the contract, the big contract, which I assume you're not arguing about, that is applicable, it says, shall remain in effect until such time as a subsequent contract is approved. So, I mean, doesn't this language pretty much tell the school district you have to reduce their salaries? That's it. That's boilerplate language in there.
And I understand that, and I agree with that, except with this exception, that the contracts that we're talking about were for the next school year, not for this school year. This contract covers the 05-06 school year. The teacher contracts we're talking about covered the 06-07 school year.
Well, that was the intention, but this is the, it's the, it covered that, that was the intention to cover the next year, but the 05-06 agreement is the one that was signed. I mean, that's the one that, that was agreed to, right?
That was the one that was in effect.
Because there was no 06-07
That's
yet.
Correct.
So, I mean, the school district's anticipating that how this is going to come out, but that isn't, doesn't, this contract language controls until they reach a new agreement. So it seems to me that the school district didn't have a choice.
I
understand the dilemma. It's horrific.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to tell one of my employees, hey, look, the deal you signed last month isn't going to be it. Your salary is going to be reduced because the union and us and on our school board negotiate a different deal, and you're bound by that. That's a tough thing to tell a teacher. Goodness.
We didn't feel we could. And Your Honor, the trial court agreed with us. I know the Department of Labor did not agree with us, but on the remedy issue, if I can just touch that, you know, the Department of Labor agreed with SEA, but they didn't agree with their remedy. In fact, they said they cannot reduce, it's right in their findings, they cannot reduce those teacher salaries. And they misread the contract and thought that we were taking money away from the returning teachers. That was incorrect, and I think everybody knows that it's incorrect. But here we are in a situation where we have the Department of Labor saying we don't think we can do this, and we don't think we can do it either. So that's why we come to you and say, if you agree that we did something erroneous in maintaining those seven contracts through this transition into a new negotiated agreement, the proper remedy is to leave the parties where they are, because no one intended this type of inequitable result for these seven teachers.
So what authority do you have to say that we should order that it just be left as it is? Because it is contrary to the language of the contract.
I simply can present to you the trial court's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and judgment on that.
Did the trial court address the remedy? Because
the trial court didn't think
we'd. So I'll ask you the same question. Would we have to remand it for you to argue that to the trial court? Because we have nothing to review. And I mean, you both agree the department was wrong.
Yeah.
And misinterpreted it, and I agree with that. But, you know, how? What would be the process if we did need to look at this? Do we remand it?
I'd agree with you there.
Because at least you'd get an opportunity, everybody get an opportunity to argue their side of it and what is equitable or whatever, if it's an equitable remedy or what. But.
Yes.
Nice. Same question I asked the other side was on the individual contract. Mm-hmm. Was there anything in that individual contract that had anything other than basically the parties to it, the term of the agreement, which was the next school year, and a dollar amount for the salary?
I don't think so. This particular one I'm looking at doesn't have the contract in it. But.
Was there anything that incorporated anything else that was would affect the individual contract between the teacher and the district?
No, not that I'm aware of.
So wouldn't you be sued if you tried to reduce the salary?
That's what we were concerned with. That's why we did not do it.
Can you tell us, I know counsel for the union couldn't tell us, but can you tell us, does the professional negotiated agreement, is that provided to the teachers when they sign this individual agreement?
Not to my knowledge. I believe that the professional negotiated agreement is given out by the SEA. I don't know that the school district gives it out.
Okay. So is there a dispute about whether this even applies in this case? Whether the teachers are bound by, the new teachers are bound by this? Is there a dispute about that?
Well, Your Honor, I argued that at the beginning of this case. It was brought as a grievance. It was brought as a class grievance. And I argued to the Department of Labor that it was inequitable to have this grievance determined as a class grievance because the teachers who were affected, these seven, or at that case it was, I think, 11, they were not parties to the action. And I was dismissed out of that. And so I do agree with you that it is a problem. I don't know as a fact and can't represent to you whether or not those seven teachers even know that we're here today, let alone what the terms of that agreement are. That's always been a concern for the district. That's why we did not reduce their salaries. We thought if we had to err, we're going to err on the side of maintaining what we offered to those employees.
And at the time you made these contracts, the seven individual contracts, an impasse had not been declared.
Not yet.
So at that point, that was the contract. That was a valid contract under the collective bargaining agreement.
That's what we thought. That's what we felt, yes. That's the position we've taken.
Except for, did you do that for all the teachers? Were all the teachers offered a contract under the 2005-06 salary schedule?
Yes.
And they all signed it?
Yes, to my knowledge, yes.
Okay. So then what happened then? You reissued a new contract when you reached the impasse and implemented your last best offer. How did that work?
We issued an addendum.
Addendum. Right.
Yes.
All right.
Correct.
So everybody else's weren't, you didn't feel that you were bound by any of them other than these seven?
Yes, we were bound by them because they had signed a contract to come back next year.
I understand, but as far as the salary, you offered the rest of them an addendum.
Yes, and go ahead.
But did the addendum, or didn't the contract say that it can be, the individual contract says that it can be changed by mutual agreement? Isn't that the language in the individual contract?
I just don't have it here, I'm sorry, but I believe that's correct. And the problem, Your Honor, to answer your question, you're right. We issued contracts. We felt they were all binding contracts, but these seven teachers were caught in that mix of going from one to the other. We compared salaries, and these seven people would have had a salary reduction. We just didn't feel we had the authority, equitably or legally, to do that.
But let me just kind of generally on the collective bargaining, if it weren't this situation, you would agree that under, all right, let's say you had reached an agreement and you implemented it or whatever, and you pluck out four or five teachers and give them something, a different independent contract that doesn't fit the agreement you've entered into in the collective bargaining process. That would be a grievance, wouldn't it?
I agree.
And that's what they're saying here, that the interim is also a grievance. So what carves that out that makes it different?
As a minimum, Your Honor. Those three words.
That's it. So
that's
if we
it.
Read it like you reading it in the trial court, so what are the repercussions of that?
Your Honor,
that then give you the opportunity to independently offer contracts individually anytime you're in an impasse?
No. I believe we are bound by good faith. I believe we're bound by 318. The entire statutory scheme. And all I can understand of the terms as a minimum, if those words are to be given effect, that means that the public employer has a right to adjust the last best offer. Otherwise, the words are meaningless. And of course, what the trial court said is the only adjustment can be up. It can't be down. For salary, as a minimum means you can't go less, but you can go more.
But normally it would mean it applies equally to everybody, though. You would agree. You could give them a higher offer than your last best offer, but it would have to be applied normally to everybody, not just seven teachers.
I think that's what we would prefer to do also. We prefer to have that. But the question is, did we inequitably apply that 06 contract? The trial court found no. The trial court found these were unique circumstances, unique to these seven individuals and no one else. And no one else in the district is affected by this. No one loses anything. I mean, the only one that loses financially is the school district, if you want to call it that. Everybody is treated according to the contract except these seven teachers, and those seven teachers were treated under the old contract for the reasons we've stated.
Let me ask you this then, as part of the remedy. Let's say Let's say you find that this, you do, you know, the to keep everything on the, like it should be, is that you did have to do it equally, but there's no real remedy here. That you were, that is, this is a grievance, but what's the remedy because we don't have the proper parties in front of us?
I agree with that, Your Honor. I think the seven teachers should be here. I've always felt that way. But in the final analysis, Your Honor, I think the Bonham case, there's language in the Bonham case that I'm not going to read back to you. Of course, it's your own language, but it essentially says that where the statutes are clear, there's no need for judicial adjustment, and what that the entire scheme provides the proper outline for negotiations. And I go back to that three words. If those three words mean anything, this is the case, because there's never any finding anywhere that either party here was negotiating in anything but good faith.
Well,
we did all that. Your Honor, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm out of time. I'm sorry.
Well, no, you get to answer his question. Oh, okay. It's your lucky day.
So I get to phrase the question the way it fit here. Is there any question that this is a one-year problem and that the next year when the contract would come up, then the contract for the individual teachers would be according to the overall agreement with the association?
That's correct, Your Honor. The next year's contract would pick up those seven teachers at the salary that they are being paid and then adjust accordingly for experience and these types of things.
So they'll always be at a different base.
That's correct. And that's another problem that faces us, is how do we calculate that back?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Neese. Ms. Plooster, you have 10 minutes. I have a question for you before you start in. There's been some discussion about whether the seven teachers, or how many of them are affected, should be allowed at some point to be heard. Is your client in agreement with that, or is your position that you're the exclusive bargaining agent and you speak for them?
We are the exclusive bargaining agent. We speak for them. We speak for the contract. And I think at one point, and I know the Department of Labor briefs may be in the record before the court. I know that this trial court aren't. And I can't remember where I argued it, but we did argue whether or not we had standing to bring this, and both the department and the trial court did find that we had standing. It's because of federal labor relations law in cases that say that the union has the right to sue to make sure that its contract is maintained.
Do the seven teachers know their salaries are being discussed here in Pierre?
They may not. I've not asked my client if they've talked with them. It has not been a secret around the school district.
But I mean, the union didn't send them a letter saying, this is to inform you that the union is contesting the salaries you're receiving, anything like that?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, we did not.
Could this be a grievance without a remedy?
I know that Mr. Neese has argued that the status quo should be maintained. We do not believe that this would be a grievance without a remedy.
Can we order individuals to pay back something who aren't even in front of that tribunal?
I do know that once or twice a year I get asked the question from a teacher that has been misplaced on a salary schedule. The business manager for that school district has determined that and is requiring the teacher to repay the overage that they had been paid.
All right, but isn't that different than in this case where the contract that they were given was correct under the statute when they signed the contract?
I disagree that it was correct. Again,
is it not correct? Because the statute says they will be given a contract based on the last year's contract, and they were given the salary that was based on that number?
Because of both the statute and the duration clause.
Which statute?
318.8.2, I believe.
That's what 8.2 says, that they will issue a contract based on the prior
number. Then when negotiations are over, the contracts are adjusted to meet the terms of the new contract.
That's not what that statute says, though, is it?
That is how, is my understanding, has always been interpreted, not only by me, but by district's attorneys across the state. That is the process. Once negotiations is over, whether it's through an agreement or whether through its imposed contract.
All right, but that contract that they have says they can change it through mutual agreement between the teacher and the district. What if the teacher doesn't agree?
I would go back to my argument and the case that I do not know the citation to right now or even the name of, that says that the negotiated agreement trumps the individual employment contract. And in that case, I would argue that the terms of the seven individual contracts is invalid because it's in conflict with the negotiated agreement.
Well, counsel, I'd like to see that case. Chief, if we can ask, they submit it.
I believe it's the Todd County School District case decided by this court in 1977.
Well, I'd like to know what she, I'd like her to submit this case that says that.
Can you send us a letter giving us the case you can't remember so we can take a look at it?
Sure.
I looked up with a copy to counsel, and they...
You can respond, Mr. Neas, if you care to. I could do that like in 7 days.
I will, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mr. Neas has argued that the district could not decrease the seven salaries due to legal binding contract. However, the flip side of that is if you can't decrease, how do you have the legal authority to increase? He had a legally binding contract.
Wait a minute. The contract says it can be changed by mutual agreement.
Again, I go back, not to belabor the point, Your Honor, but go back to if the salaries were changed to something that was not within the negotiated agreement, that would be individually bargaining, and that would be an unfair labor practice. And so I don't think that that language is applicable in this case.
Well, that's correct. You're saying you can't increase it, but normally a teacher's not going to contest their salary being increased.
Correct.
It'd be a strange case.
Correct. But what I'm saying is if Mr. Neas is arguing he didn't have the legal authority to change the binding contract that would lower the seven salaries, to me the flip side of that is if you don't have the legal authority to change that contract, which was what he is saying, you can't change it for the good.
Sure you can't. It says mutual agreement.
And again, we go back to this, to my argument that that would be individual bargaining, and that would be an unfair labor practice.
And that's what it isn't an unfair labor practice that you brought here. It's a grievance, and that's what the department found, correct?
Correct.
That it was an individual bargaining, and it's, or that they weren't applying the contract.
Yeah, correctly. Yeah, that
the group, as far as.
Right. We did not allege that these seven teachers individually bargained. They were offered contracts under the 0506, which they had to be offered under. Our argument is that once the 0607 contract was imposed, the 0506 and its terms, including salaries, ceased to exist, and the only valid terms that could be offered to the teachers were those under the 0607 contract, which unfortunately meant that for these seven teachers, their salaries had to go down. Justice Meyer Henry spent some time on 318.8.2 and the difference between if there's intervention through the department through mediation or fact-finding where they could go for impose as a minimum versus the language that says that fact-finding and mediation are not done, that as a minimum language doesn't exist there.
Do you know what happened here? Did it go to the Was there a fact-finding process?
I actually asked my client that yesterday because I noticed that same, as I was rereading the statute, noticed that difference there, so I wanted to make sure which part we were working under. They went to mediation. They did not do fact-finding. So the intervention of the department was requested.
Okay.
So we're under the as and minimum.
All right.
I did ask that question. We believe that to allow the trial court's ruling to stand would actually take away our rights under 318.8.2 to request intervention, because all of a sudden you're going to find yourself, well, if we want to make sure that the last offer is imposed, then we just got to not ask for mediation. Otherwise, we're going to get into that as a minimum and then perhaps allow a situation such as this case or even a court or school district deciding that their salary offer to the teachers was $1,000. They have 25 teachers. They give 20 of them $1,000, and because they like five other teachers better, that they decide they're going to give them 15. We are fearful of the broad reach of the trial court's ruling under as a minimum language. We believe that such an interpretation would render the negotiations under Chapter 318 meaningless. It is called collective bargaining for a reason. It should be bargaining for the collective whole and not allow piecemeal bargaining to go on. We believe that the trial court's ruling allows for individual bargaining, or could allow for individual bargaining. I see that my time is almost up. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bluster. We will be in recess.